May God bless us as we look at God's word together. This morning's Lenten selection is clearly one of the best known parables of Jesus. That it appears in Lent is in fact interesting, and it appears more than just one out of 3 years, and therefore it draws us into the sense of being ready for the Passion of Christ, for Good Friday and Easter Sunday. If you're like me, you grew up knowing this parable as labeled as the parable of the prodigal son. But in fact, most modern editions of Scripture now label this parable not the parable of the prodigal son, but the parable of the two sons. This context makes it clear. Jesus is responding to the Pharisees and the scribes when they grumble at Jesus and say, "This man Jesus, he welcomes sinners and eats with them." It is this interaction which prompts Jesus to this parable. And this parable has invited much in the world of arts, music, visual drama, and so on. Looking for the image. There we go. This morning I want to invite us to consider this parable in the work of an 18th century artist, Rembrandt, and the work of a 20th century priest and writer, Henry Nouwen. Henry Nouwen was born in the Netherlands, worked in Europe, taught at Harvard Divinity School, but spent the last decades of his life working with the L'Arche community in Toronto. L'Arche is a community that many Mennonites are acquainted with, where mentally handicapped people live in community with non-mentally challenged people. Nouwen discovered in the face of the mentally handicapped people that he lived with, he found in them the face of God. It was during his work that he first came across this Rembrandt painting of the story of the two sons taught by Jesus. Eventually, he went to see the original work in what was then Leningrad, now St. Petersburg. Who have seen this here, there, in St. Petersburg? Nobody. Okay, you need to go to the Hermitage. It's beautiful and it's large. I do remember seeing it. Nouwen discovered in the face of the mentally handicapped people the face of God. And eventually, as he was more and more intrigued with this work, he went to see the original work, what was then Leningrad, and was able to sit before it for many hours, for several days. He began a work which resulted in a book called The Return of the Prodigal Son, A Story of Homecoming. And so through Jesus' parable, as is seen in the art of Rembrandt, a Protestant of the 18th century, and the deep reflection of Henry Nouwen, a Catholic priest of the 20th century, I would like to explore with us in the 21st century, Christians of Mennonite and other persuasions, how this parable can help us to prepare for the death and resurrection of Jesus. Rembrandt painted this picture towards the end of his life. Nouwen in his book explores how this might have reflected in the painting as opposed to some of his earlier works. And then Nouwen invites us to see how each one of us, everyone here, has some elements of all three of the main characters of the painting of this parable. We think most often of the prodigal son. Even Nouwen names his book that way. And mostly, most of us think of the prodigal son as someone we know, but not ourselves, right? Though there might be clear exceptions among us. Nouwen says, and the colors are hard to bring out in this very dark painting, but the soft yellow-brown of the son's underclothes look beautiful when seen in rich harmony of the red cloak of the father. But the truth of the matter is that the sun is over the underclothes, dressed in rags, betrays the great misery that lies behind him. It's interesting that when people who grew up in cultures closer to the Middle East are asked, why would a son ask for his part of the inheritance? The answer seems to be given that in essence, the son wishes to see his father dead. Leaving home, Nouwen says, is a denial of the spiritual reality that I belong to God with every part of my being. There are many voices in our world full of promise that are very loud and very seductive. Go out and prove that you are worth something, we hear. And Nouwen suggests that many of us have the prodigal in us, that our journey away from God may have been inward, not outward. He grew up with the messages. See whether you grew up with any of these. Show me that you are a good boy. You had better be better than your friend. Be sure you can make it on your own. These trophies show how good a player you are. Parents and friends, of course, have been sincere in these comments. They are usually well-intended. Limited human expressions of an unlimited human divine, Nouwen suggests. But if we forget the divine love behind it, these messages can become dominant in our lives, leading us to the distant country that the prodigal son found himself in. Anger, resentment, jealousy, desire for revenge, lust, greed, and rivalries are signs, he suggests, that we have left home. He finds himself wondering why someone hurt me, why someone rejected me, or didn't pay attention to me. Have we ever had those feelings? And we search for this love where it cannot be found. The world says, yes, I love you if you are good looking. I love you if you have a good education. I love you if you have a good job. The ifs, he suggests, are the hiddenness in the world's love, he suggests. He says, I am the prodigal son every time I search for unconditional love where it cannot be found. The prodigal son in our story decides to return. And Nouwen suggests that the painter has decided that the sword is the sign that his father's that he still has this left from his father. That he has sold everything else. But perhaps Rembrandt thought of this as a symbol that he still had this one connection. We do have a sign of lost sons among the disciples, don't we? Judas and Peter are both lost children. And how did they choose in the end to deal with their lostness? One committed suicide, Judas, and one came back and asked for forgiveness, like the prodigal son, Peter. But both were lost sons. Both were the prodigals. So when we seek to go back, as our prodigal son does, he sought to go back as a servant, remember? And the human experience with forgiveness usually has an if in it. If we are willing to forgo revenge and show some measure of charity, I'll forgive you. Is there some ifness to our forgiveness often? And so our prodigal son goes back as a trusted servant, or wants to go back and say to his father, I know how people forgive. They forgive with ifs. And just let me be a trusted servant. I know that will be your if. But am I willing to be restored to the full responsibility of being the son? Nouwen wonders. And so perhaps we don't ask God for the full forgiveness because we too don't want the responsibility of what it means to be the son. Nouwen suggests that Jesus also sees himself as a younger son at least in part, in the sense that Jesus left the Father, like the Son, for a distant land. Philippians 2 tells us that Jesus left all to come to the earth. And Jesus knows what it is to leave the Father and knows what it is to be forsaken. We have, when Jesus is on the cross, what does he pray? He prays, my God, my Father, why have you forsaken me? And so even Jesus knows the feelings of the younger son. And so we too may claim that we are the younger son when we've maybe resisted it most of our lives. But there probably are more of us here that have usually identified ourselves as the elder son. Now look at the elder son up here, the other dominant male. What is his stance? He doesn't reach out. He doesn't smile. He doesn't express welcome. Now it's interesting that the center of the canvas is not, in fact, the prodigal with his father, right? The center is not there. And so the older son is also close to the center. The other son is clearly there. The older son wants to please. He certainly is envious of the younger siblings who are less concerned about pleasing parents and others. Those of us who've been oldest children in the family, have we felt that some way? Sometimes the younger siblings are more carefree. And we sometimes envy it, don't we? I'm an oldest. I don't know about you. And we are the ones who have complied and given duty. And we have seen the duty and being the oldest son as being a burden, and that we are meant to serve. And many of us have that sense too within the church, have we not? The sense that we've been placed with this burden, and then along come these people to take the services of the church, and they don't deserve it because we've put in all the work. Is that not the older son? And so it results in a sense in its own slavery, with resentment, bitterness, and jealousy. And we become, with the older son, more like that of judgment, condemnation, and prejudice. And Nouwen suggests sometimes that the people who are most active in faith communities, not all, but sometimes some of us, and maybe all of us some of the time, are prone to this being more judgmental, more condemning, and more prejudiced. And isn't that an irony? And isn't that at that point that we are, in fact, the older son? And what is it the most? Sometimes the sense that we are without joy. Complainers are hard to live with, Nouwen suggests, and that very few people enjoy complainers. And how do we respond to those who are self-rejecting? Oh, I'm no good. I can't do this really well. I do this poorly. My work isn't good. And then, ironically, we feel more rejected, because people don't want to hear that anymore after a while. And so Nouwen suggests that not only does the younger son come home, but then we have the scene of the older son coming home in the parable, right? And what does the father say to this son that is complaining that his brother has been given this party, and so on? And here are the words, I think, that have struck me anew. And I think we hear it sometimes in the parable. We've heard it since we were children. And do we really hear it? The Father says, "You are with me always." It is, in fact, a loving statement. You are with me always. Feel at home. You are loved. And I think for the older son, if he wants to hear, if we want to hear as the older son, that this is what we will come to. It is an invitation to know. The Father is giving us an invitation to know that we are loved as well. Resentment, and gratitude are the flip sides, are they not? And it's interesting that those involved in 12-step work, Alcoholics Anonymous and other groups like that, one of the things they stress the most is to use gratitude to replace resentment. And I think the older son lives with resentment, and maybe sometimes we as well. And now it suggests that Jesus can also be seen as the older son, as the beloved son of God, and shows us how being the beloved son can look. There is no distance between him and the Father. There is no fear and suspicion between the Father and the Son. And we can have this love as well. And then there is the Father. Rembrandt chooses a nearly blind old man. Look at the face. To be the Father. Rembrandt chooses a nearly blind old man to communicate God's love. Look at the hands of the Father. I don't know how well it shows on the screen, but Rembrandt doesn't paint two different hands for no purpose. Can you see it, or is it hard to see? Can you see that the hands are different than each other? Okay. One is rough and sign of work and can be holding and affirming and being firm in the sense, right? That's the hand on the Son. And that's clearly the hand of what? What relationship? A father? Right? But what about the other hand? Nouwen suggests that Rembrandt has done this very deliberately, that the other hand is a very soft hand. And whose hand does that represent, usually in our culture? The more the hand of the mother. And now I'm suggesting that Rembrandt does nothing by accident. And so that the loving embrace that the younger son feels and is available to the older son is that of both father and mother. I find that very compelling. It requires a new way of seeing things. Now one wrestles with the older son's resentment. Why didn't the father call him when the party started? I've asked that most of my life. Why did Jesus pay the one who worked the least the same as the most in another parable? What interior about face does it require for us to see God's grace there? Somehow we need the comparison. I was the good son. Why didn't you call me to the party? Instead of seeing that God's grace is there instantly for anyone, he had the last minute conversion. How would we need to change to see the joy in being in God's love and knowing it, and the younger son to know it now? And then Noun sees how Jesus and the Father are one. And if we are one with God's mission, then we are also invited to be like the Father, are we not? Jesus invites us to be one with the Father as he is one with the Father. And so we too are invited to invite others to come home, to hear, feel our loving embrace on behalf of God. We have much pain in our lives as younger sons, as older sons, as fathers and mothers, as we watch the pain around us in the sturdy hand of God to do the heavy lifting, and the kind hand of God to help us as we weep. In our congregation, we are called to be that kind of a people, to be open to the wrestling that people have in their lives. There are many parts of our lives where we are far from home, whether interior or our exterior, where our actions or others' actions or nobody's actions at all have taken us to a dark place. There is a series that we have had in the front hall for a few weeks and now in the back hall that is in fact called Close to Home, and I thought we would introduce it this Sunday. A series of pamphlets from the Mennonite Church Publishing, a series of 21 pamphlets, And I think the close to home is meant here to be because which of our families is not touched by some of these issues? Which of our families are not touched by them? But also in this Sunday's sense, we can understand that Jesus is calling us home. And these pamphlets are one in many ways in which the church reaches out. And I thought I would just read the list. And there are other topics which could have been used, but it's in your bulletin. And I will just read the list out loud to give you a sense of what this series is about. And in each series, there is a personal story, which is followed by some biblical teachings, which is followed by what the best of the sciences, social sciences, can teach us and where we can go for help on these issues. And they are there for free for the taking. And we would ask that you make a contribution to the Deacon's Fund of a loonie or so into the box, and I think that's a good use of that money exactly. So the topics are acquaintance rape, alcoholism, bipolar disorder, and by the way, my wife's story is the story in that one, and sometimes the person is named, as it is in that case, and sometimes for good reasons the person isn't named. Dealing with bullying, with child abuse, dementia, depression, drug abuse, eating disorders, electronic addiction, elder abuse, extreme anxiety, gambling, marital discord, infertility, overwhelming debt, pornography, post-traumatic stress disorder, self-harm, spousal abuse, and teenage pregnancy. These are issues that are close to our homes, are they not? And these are issues that the Father wishes us to come home. And whether we live with this issue in our own life, or we have family members or friends who do, we are called to be this loving, embracing community that welcomes home persons no matter where they are in their life, that welcomes each one of us home. In this time of Lent, as we move, as Jesus moves to the cross, may we know that the Father is there for us, that the Father wishes to welcome us, whether today we are the elder son or the younger son, and that the Father invites us into the ministry of welcoming the younger and the older son as well. Jesus is calling us home, calling for you and for me. Let us sing hymn number 491 in the Blue Book, Softly and Tenderly Jesus is Calling, 491. I would invite you to stand.